Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Film Haven Reviews. I'm your host Sawyer as always, and today we are finishing up our theme of 90s noir nostalgia with the very goofy 1994 film The Shadow, starring Alec Baldwin. Also has Ian McKellen in it, you know, Gandalf, and then it has Tim Curry in it as well. Has a lot of little people here and there, but those are the big ones. So as we wrap up this theme, we really want to think about what was I trying to accomplish with this theme? And I was trying to put together a connection between all these. It just seemed like within this four-year period, 1990, two of these films being in 1990 and then this one being in 1994, having this trench coat fedora wearing protagonist, I'm like, what's the deal with that? Like, how do we unpack that? And I feel like I've maybe, I don't know if I've gotten to the root of why in the 90s in particular this was a thing, but I have a couple guesses, one of which being that the art style, especially in this movie and in Dick Tracy, is very, you know, elaborate painted backdrops and great miniature sets and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, that is just so reminiscent of the 1989 Batman. And of course, The Shadow comes out a couple years after the second Batman, Tim Burton Batman movie. And I've been kind of mentioning that movie throughout this theme as I kind of realized, one being that it has the same composer, Danny Elfman, but also it is the set design and the art design. And considering that those movies all came out right after 1989, it could be that maybe the audience and the executives and everything were just ready to create movies that would kind of capture and maybe utilize the desire for audiences to see movies like that, movies like the 1989 Batman. And, I mean, that's one thing I could think of. I could be completely wrong with that, but it just seems a little too convenient that that movie would come out in 1989, and then within the next 4 years, 5 years, you see all these movies that are very similar come out. I mean, there is a lot in The Shadow. There is a lot that screams Tim Burton Batman. The score is unfortunately not composed by Danny Elfman. However, the caveat to that is it's someone who's trying to very much emulate Danny Elfman. To the point that when the film first started and I was starting to hear, you know, the brass and the strings and in that very familiar tone, I was like, uh-oh, was my guess correct? And I looked it up and it's not. It's not Danny Elfman, but it is definitely a Danny Elfman score, if that makes sense. It has those resounding brass movements. And in all honesty, the character, the Shadow, has some things that are very similar to Batman. The Shadow himself has he has his alter ego, Lamont Cranston, and then he also has an extra name, Ying Ko, which I promise I watched the movie, but I don't exactly know where they're getting that name. We'll get into it later, but anyway, so the Shadow has, you know, he has an alter ego, very reminiscent, obviously, of Bruce Wayne, but also he's super rich, you know, very privileged, very much like Bruce Wayne. He's being a masked vigilante who the cops are annoyed, but he's also, like, close to the cops at the same time. And then there's also this whole, like, his origin story having a lot to do with going out to, like, Tibet and China and a little bit of Mongolia in there, the steppe, and that is somewhat reminiscent of the League of Assassins in the Batman story, where he goes and fights, you know, basically trains with ninjas and stuff. So there's a lot of comparisons there, and if anything, I would say that Batman actually is inspired by The Shadow, because The Shadow comes out in 1930 or 31 as a radio character. And Batman comes out in 1939. He debuts in 1939, like 8-9 years later, which is pretty crazy because obviously Batman has eclipsed The Shadow in popularity. However, doing some research on The Shadow and his character, he was extremely famous. Now, I had never heard of him, and the only inkling of a character like The Shadow that I could even remember was in the game Fallout, which that show is out right now, so it's very topical, of course. But in Fallout 4, they do, I think, basically an homage to The Shadow with a character called, I think it was like the Silver Spectre or something like that. And it was like, he was like a radio show, and you can listen on the in the game to a radio in the game, and there's like episodes of The Silver Spectre, and I, it's very much just a straight up homage to The Shadow. And so I was kind of aware of the vibe. I just didn't know that it was rooted in something that was real. But The Shadow is actually extremely, extremely famous, especially for its time. But I totally over my head, which is why I love doing these weird themes, is because you never know when you might find out a you know, monolith of pop culture that you didn't know existed before. And just like Dick Tracy, I kind of wanted, I knew it was a radio program after doing some research before, you know, picking the movie to watch, but I still wanted to kind of go in blind and then do some research afterwards. And so I've been looking at stuff, and I even listened to an entire episode of the old radio program, and it's great. I mean, it's really fun. I could definitely see if I was a kid. I mean, it's like the, it's like the epitome of a pulp story, but on the radio. I think eventually, from what I was reading, The Shadow did become a in a pulp magazine, and there was a guy who would basically write a new novel every month with The Shadow, and it was like, he's like the most famous pulp character in that era, which is crazy. I mean, I think it went from 1937 to 1949. Pretty good run. And also, it's really cool, the origins of his character as well, because he kind of started out as a narrator for other detective stories radio shows. Like, the name of the show is Detective Stories, and he was the narrator. And at the beginning, he would always say, "Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows." And that was the opening line of the show, Detective Story. And then people loved The Shadow so much that they actually kind of retrofitted a character to him, and he got his own show and became this, you know, superhero, kind of anti-hero, though. If you watch the movie, at least, he's a bit of an anti-hero because he's got a dark past, you know. He's not all good. He's trying to be good, which just, you know, gives it a little bit of a layer of depth there, where, you know, same kind of thing. Batman is, he's good, but the darkness in him is his need for vengeance. So he wants to do right, but he's kind of, in some ways, he's got a similar motivation to a lot of the other criminals that he is dealing with. But that's a big Batman through line. And there's a similar kind of darkness, try to do good, and you're also kind of dark vibe with The Shadow as well. But to actually talk about the movie, I'm really glad that I listened to that radio program and that I did some research, because it really did help me understand the movie. Because if you have no context, that movie is the wackiest thing you've ever seen. It is really weird. I mean, the movie starts off in Tibet, right? And the character, Lamont, you know, Alec Baldwin's character, The Shadow, is just like some guy with long fingernails and like a harem of women in a Tibetan palace. And I'm like, what is going on? And there's no explanation, by the way. There's a little altercation between him and one of his like hirelings. And basically he proves that he's kind of evil right now, or he definitely has no moral qualms about doing things that are bad. He's not a good dude. And then he gets kidnapped and goes to a Tibetan palace where he talks to this guy who's kind of like a Buddha, or a, maybe more like a Dalai Lama kind of guy. And he gives him this dagger, and the dagger is like a sentient being that is like a Medusa, like a Gorgon on the hilt, that comes to life using, I mean, the best CGI that 1994 has to offer, and like actively attacks Alec Baldwin as he's like trying to force his control over it. I mean, they really don't explain anything. It just things just happen. They just start happening. And then next thing you know, because of this conversation, he has now basically been endowed with the powers of the Shadow, and he's been sent to New York City to mop up the criminal element, or to do good. You know, there's really no, he's just there to fight for good and try to change his ways. But it's weird because he seems super reluctant to do so. But then when you skip to him being in New York City, he's just the Shadow and he's actually trying to do good. And like the development there, I watched it with Allie, and Allie was just like, where's the character development? Like, what? And I'm like, they're hinting at stuff. And she's like, no, there's no like development whatsoever. Things are just happening. And it is true. It jumps around a lot. And I think part of this is because they're trying to fit a lot of, like, I mean, The Shadow has tons of episodes between the radio mysteries, the novels about him, the comic books. I mean, there are so many stories to tell within The Shadow's world to try to have an origin story of sorts. They really, it seems like they had to rush a lot of stuff. Even though the movie is, you know, well past 90 minutes, it still felt rushed in a lot of places because it just seems like it's such a character that has so many elements to it that are, I don't know if extraneous is the right word, but it seems like he's had a lot of different eras. And because of that, you have a lot of maybe dissonant and just tonally different elements that are coming in. I mean, you've got this New York City 1930s, very much like Dick Tracy, like I was, like what I wanted really, which is these amazing New York City backdrops, beautifully painted backdrops, which they did have this. I mean, even while I was saying, you know, WTF during watching the movie, I was also, every scene transition had these beautiful sets, and I was like, oh, I love that though. I love that. So it was giving me Dick Tracy when it comes to the set design, but the story itself was just so weird. And so basically the main bad guy is this, like, is the last descendant of Genghis Khan, who comes over on like a Mongolian sarcophagus that was his great 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 grandfather's, and he's made his way through a museum and has basically kind of the same powers as the Shadow has. He has the ability to manipulate people's minds. The Shadow also is able to kind of go invisible. That's like one of his powers. He has like super strength a little bit, and then he also has these two M1911 pistols that he whips out too. And that was so he's got a lot of different abilities, but the clouding of men's minds is the one that both of them have. So they're kind of like equal foils for each other in a way. And apparently, like I was talking about before, like I was alluding to before, the Shadow is also this Ying Ko guy. And he apparently was some Mongolian conqueror, even though he's white. And I don't know if I thought his face was supposed to have changed, maybe because he turned into the Shadow. He like reincarnated into someone else. But then they have like a flashback scene, and he's just Alec Baldwin in a Mongolian warrior outfit, like destroying a village and pillaging. And I'm just like, what is going on? And that's what's so weird, is that now you have this bad guy who's, okay, so there's a lot of Chinese elements, there's some Tibetan elements, and then there's some Mongolian elements. Now, of course, all of those cultures are distinct, but they're also kind of, they have similarities in history, and the fact that, like, Mongolia took over a lot of China and Tibet at times, and China tried to take over Tibet, and, you know, there's all kinds of different geopolitics that go into that. But it did kind of seem like they were just throwing it all out there, like it interchangeably almost, you know what I mean? Like everything was just Chinese, but then they're also the look of Mongolian things. And does that make sense? Anyway, so, but there's like, to give you an example of the kind of dissonant tones within this movie, is that there is literally this scene where a Mongolian soldier is riding a 1930s taxi and is trying to tail the Shadow, or Lamont, his alter ego, and in New York City, in downtown New York City. And it's just like, what? Like, and no one cares that there's this Mongolian soldier running around. And so it's very, I mean, in a way that's very pulpy, in a way that's very campy. And after a while, I think I started to realize that there was a lot of humor that was supposed to be in this. That it didn't necessarily, like, it was funny, but it didn't seem like it was funny for, like, on purpose, you know what I mean? Like, it's like one of those bad good kind of movies. It was given that kind of vibe, even though they had some incredible backdrops. But I think after a while, I realized that it really was that silly and ridiculous, even in these radio stories. And of course, mysticism and occultism and stuff like that was really big in the 1930s. And I think that's a big part of this as well. You've got the teachings of people like Helena Blavatsky, who like created theosophy, which is totally based off of a lot of Eastern religions. It's basically mixing like Western Christianity with Eastern philosophies and stuff like that. I mean, in Buddhism, I mean, in Hinduism, and mixing them all together. I mean, she even went to Tibet. You know, it's like, it's very much that. I mean, in the 1930s, it was still a big thing to be into theosophy and occultism and mysticism and stuff like that, or as they call it, Western esotericism, stuff like that. And so there's definitely a theosophy influence on this character and the stories that he was going through in the 1930s, as well as, too, there's also, like, the big Egyptian craze that was in the late 19th century, early 20th century. People were really into Egyptology because of all the discoveries they were making in Egypt, and so there's a little bit of that, too. Like, the episode that I listened to of the old radio story was about, like, the old tomb. You know, there's some discovery in the old tomb, and they thought it was a mummy, but the shadow revealed that it was actually, you know, this scientist who was creating a curse, you know, scientifically. But it was very much within that realm of people being obsessed with Egypt at the time. So that actually kind of retroactively makes sense why this movie in 1994 has all these weird elements in it, is because they're really trying to do a true callback to The Shadow. And I think that softens my rating a little bit. Honestly, I really enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed it more than Darkman, which is sad because I think in some ways Darkman might be technically a better movie. But as far as, I mean, in the end, you gotta give me enjoyment. You know, I was more bored in Darkman than I was in this movie. Because even the parts that were bad or didn't make a lot of sense were entertaining. And there was kind of like, what? That was going on that made me laugh. And I enjoyed that. I it was so random and so weird. It makes a lot more sense now because the vibe really was very similar to the old radio programs. For example, you know, when you first are introed to The Shadow, his intro scene in New York City is awesome. It's this great, it's like on the Brooklyn Bridge. And it's like dark and foggy, and it's very Art Deco and beautiful mobsters. It's exactly what I was wanting from out of the Dick Tracy movie as well. There's a Tommy gun involved, where a guy's just shooting wildly trying to catch the shadow. I mean, it's perfect. But he's also saying these lines like that I was just quoting about the shadow knows, and it's like, what's going on? And then he ends the scene saying, "The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The shadow knows." And it's like, what? Like, you're watching Alec Baldwin say this, first of all. And also, this is like 1994. So it's not done in a 1930s voice. It's just done in an Alec Baldwin voice. And because of that, I think it was just really goofy. But now that I understand that was a very famous line that he would say at the beginning and end of every episode, it totally makes sense. So, like I've been kind of getting at this whole episode, the movie's goofy, the CGI is really weird, but at the same time, really not that bad. For 1994, like, honestly, pretty good. That little dagger that attacks him, she comes back, by the way, it's a weird thing. There is just so many unique things in this movie, and I think that's why I ended up liking it a little bit more than Darkman. And once again, Darkman was him, Sam Raimi, the director of Darkman, trying to do The Shadow because he wasn't given the rights to The Shadow. And so he even tried to make another Shadow movie in 2006, but couldn't get it off the ground. So obviously, I'm sure Sam Raimi honestly probably liked this movie. But he tried to do the Dark Man, which was kind of like The Shadow, but also, like, I think mixed with like Phantom of the Opera. And in doing so, he did have some cool elements, but at the same time, I think the source material Shadow is just more, it's just more interesting, even though it's really crazy. Like I said, Darkman may be a better made movie, but The Shadow is a more fun movie, and it has the weirdness that I was wanting to see in Darkman, because Sam Raimi is a very weird director. He makes a lot of weird things in his movies, and the weirdness in Darkman didn't hit the same as the weirdness in The Shadow. I feel like Sam Raimi doing The Shadow could have been really good. And maybe he will do it eventually. Who knows? You never know. He's not that old. So Sam Raimi could keep going and make a Shadow in, you know, the 2020s. Who knows? But anyway, so yeah, like I said, the set design was great. The special effects was actually pretty good. There were some okay fight scenes. The whole, like, using his abilities as the Shadow was cool. Oh, there was one thing, though, that just absolutely irked me. I still don't understand why. I think I'm starting to understand, maybe, but whenever Alec Baldwin would change into the Shadow, they would put, like, they would put prosthetics on him. And so this look of the red scarf, the fedora, and the trench coat was accented by these like even bushier eyebrows than he normally has, and like a bigger nose and brow, but it looked so fake, and I'm like, it made me uncomfortable, like almost like Uncanny Valley or something. I'm like, why are you doing this? Because it looks almost like Alec Baldwin, but they just like prosthetic'd him up a little bit, which made no sense, because I'm like, you already look like him and you're covering your face up, so like why are you changing the way you look? I don't understand it. But I've seen some of the covers from some of the novels and the pulp magazines, and the face looks a lot more like the prosthetic version. So I think maybe they were just trying to look more like the character, the shadow. But my only issue with that is that Alec Baldwin already kind of looks like him. And if you kind of almost look exactly like him, then that's good enough, in my opinion. You could have saved a lot of money and time having to do those prosthetics. But anyway, I digress. That was really my biggest gripe in the movie. Everything else was like, I mean, it's silly fun. It's pulpy. That's the point. Some of the characters are dumb, and some of their motivations are silly. And the you know, his love interest is very, like, she gets better over time. But at the beginning, she's very dumb and just kind of like, whatever. She's very useless. But over time, she kind of becomes his, like, research partner. And, like, she's investigating things along with him, which I think is more her role in the radio show. At least the episode I listened to, that's very much what she was doing. Was like, I'll look into this, and you do it, you do that. And you're like, we'll split up and we'll figure it out. They're more of a team. I really like that part. But the beginning, it took a while to get there, because at the beginning she was kind of just like just some girl who was smitten with the character Lamont, you know, the alter ego of the shadow. But it eventually got there. But that was what was kind of annoying, was that it didn't get there quick enough. And so I felt like there was, it's as crazy as it was for an hour and 45 minute movie, I felt like there needed to be more, or I needed a sequel or something. Like, this was so much setup, and they really did bring a lot of this world building into it, and then nothing else. Like, it just ended. The movie was just over. It was a little anticlimactic, but and not in a way that I'm really holding against the movie. I feel like there's just so much more to tell with this character, because he is such a long-running character that I just feel like, there, I was always going to want more. But the fact that I left the movie wanting more, I think, is a good sign. I think that it was a sign that it was actually effective. So as silly as it was, I mean, it's not a great movie, guys. I'm really not saying that this is like the. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10, because it in some ways it was not the story, especially the script, could have been written better. The plot structure could have been written a lot better. The whole first 20 minutes. Me and Allie's heads were just like spinning. We had no idea what was going on. It had no context. And I don't think that reading about the shadow would have helped. The whole Tibet story was just so like, what is happening? I think they could have done that better. But overall, I mean, it's a fun, pulpy, weird, very unique ride. And in the vein of one of my now favorite movie podcasts, even though I do a movie podcast, believe it or not, I actually do listen to other movie podcasts as well, especially within the kind of realm of Instagram. You know, I try to listen to other people's and support them and download their stuff too. And one of my favorite ones that I found is one called The Movie Podium. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably seen I've been reposting a lot of their stuff. But they're like a big group of guys that are like old high school friends and middle school friends, and they're still, you know, good friends. And so they made this podcast where they basically take movies of certain years. Sometimes they do little themes and stuff, but they basically take a movie and they have all these different questions and prompts that they ask each other. And one of my favorite questions that they do is, would this movie be made today? And this movie would 100% not be made today. I do think, like I said, Sam Raimi, if anyone was going to do it, it's going to be Sam Raimi, but it wouldn't look like this movie at all. I think this perfect mixture of early to mid 90s production style mixed with this very unique and eclectic backdrop that the 1930s gave this character, the Shadow, just created a movie that is just filled with head-tilting uniqueness. I don't know how else to say it. Like, it's unique, and it makes you be like, why did they do that? But at the same time, I'm like, I'm so glad that they did, because it's very entertaining. So anyway, I'm ranting, but I guess I don't think this movie would be made today, and it makes me a little sad, but I'm so glad that it does exist. And 1994, man, The Shadow, 7 out of 10. This has turned out to be a really fun theme. The Dark Man was a little bit of a disappointment, but Dick Tracy and this movie were really fun. And I just think it's such a weird little moment in movie history where a lot of these types of movies were being made around the same time. It's just very strange to me. And I'm just happy that it exists. And I can't wait to find other little moments like that within the decades of film history and to highlight those two themes, because this kind of stuff is just really interesting to me. And now I've learned so much about Dick Tracy, about The Shadow, and I would have never known those things had I not done this theme. So hopefully I have inspired some of you guys to watch these movies and maybe learn more about these characters yourself, because they're really interesting and they're worth knowing. And they're cultural touch points as well. I mean, especially these last two. The Shadow is one of the biggest characters in fiction for decades. And Dick Tracy is right there with them. I mean, Dick Tracy's still going on. The legacy of Dick Tracy looms large, especially since his little watch ended up inspiring the cell phone and then eventually the smartwatch. So, I mean, that's a huge cultural footprint right there. And technological footprint. Societal footprint, I should say. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great week this week. Next theme, I'm literally in between like three or four different themes, and I don't know what fits best after something like this. We could go back to the 70s, but I just was there. I just don't want to like beat that too hard. And then we've also got some things like underwater movies that I've been wanting to do for a long time. And then we've also got rabbit hole thrillers. I got all kinds of themes whirling around my head. So I'm going to figure that out, and it'll be a surprise for both of us next week. So I hope you guys have a great week this week, and I will see you next Friday.